seal out drafts, dust, and moisture with MD brand weather stripping from Menards. A well-sealed home is more comfortable and energy efficient. We have the largest selection of in-stock weather stripping with over 100 products available to take home and start lowering your energy bills today. Save big money on weather stripping right now at Menards. And check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for more great deals happening now. Save big money at Menards.
Hey there, everybody. Welcome back to Food for Thought. Thoughts if it were you. I'm Neo Gentrix, and this is the podcast where we chew down on big ideas that shape our lives. Today, we're looking into a deep mirror at a shape-shifting factor, a medical disease or medical mystery known as the disease of a thousand faces. We know it as lupus. Imagine your body as a fortress and your immune system is the highly trained army sworn to protect it from invaders like bacteria and viruses. It's a marvel of biological engineering, able to tell the difference between self and non-self with incredible precision. Now, imagine that army, through some profound case of mistaken identity, declares war on the very fortress it's supposed to protect. That internal civil war is the reality of an autoimmune disease, and that's what leads us to the disease of lupus. It's the battle that is waged on a thousand different fronts. Today, in today's Food for Thought episode, lupus is what we'll be discussing. It isn't exactly just one disease, if I'm being perfectly fair. It's a shape-shifting type of disease, an illness that conforms to no single pattern, manifesting in a vast and unpredictable range of symptoms that make it incredibly difficult to diagnose, treat, and or live with. This isn't just a clinical descriptor, either. It speaks to a deeper psychological burden. Living with lupus means confronting an illness that makes it hard to trust your own body, challenging your sense of self. It's a chronic long-term condition that is not contagious. It's an invisible illness that requires a deep well of resilience from those who live with it every single day. Today, we're going to demystify this complex condition. We'll break it down into what it really is, what autoimmunity really is, unmask the thousand faces of lupus by looking at its symptoms, exploring the shocking disparities in who it affects, and finally look at the hope on the horizon for treatment and management. Y'all ready? Well then, let's break that down, shall we? Everybody, and we're back. All right, so let's check out lupus. This will be your guide to the disease of a thousand faces. Let's get started, shall we? First off, the science of what is autoimmunity. First off, to really understand lupus, we first have to get a handle on this concept of autoimmunity. Mouthful. It's a healthy immune system. Is your personal defense force, right? So it produces proteins called antibodies that target germs, right? So the whole system is built on its ability to distinguish your own healthy tissues from foreign invaders, right? This is how your healthy immune system functions like it's supposed to. It basically helps you define how your system's supposed to work in ways that it's naturally designed to, right? Second is the autoimmune mistake. In an autoimmune disease, the recognition system completely breaks down, right? So the immune system mistakenly identifies your own healthy cells as threats and then launches attacks on them and starts targeting and destroying the normal body cells of your, skin, body, organs, what have you. This leads to the next phase, autoantibodies and inflammation. Instead of helpful antibodies, it creates autoantibodies. This attack triggers chronic inflammation, redness, swelling, heat, pain, which causes the tissue damage that defines the condition. Not every time you have inflammation does this mean that you have lupus, but it does say that there is a possibility that it's there. Sometimes it's just caused from self-inflicted injury from falling or hitting something too hard. And this is a normal reaction that your body has because it's supposed to be trying to defend itself and figure out what's going on so it can correct it. But in this case, it doesn't actually do this. Which then leads to SLE, not SLI. That's a completely different disease. One we'll cover in the future. The most common form of SLI, or systematic lupus erythematosus, is that it's systematic, right? Because it's a self-attacking protein that can happen in virtually any part of the body. It can happen in the joints, the skin, the kidneys, the heart, the brain, the lungs. And in which case, I guess you can kind of figure, depending on where it is, it could be immediately deadly or it could be something that spirals over time. The course of the disease is famously unpredictable. It's marked by episodes of illness called flares, when symptoms get worse, followed by a period of weakness or remission when they start to improve. This constant uncertainty is one of the hardest parts of living with this disease, and it's one of the things that makes it hard for a lot of people to deal with it. Understandably so, right? Next, let's talk about those symptoms, because honestly, I feel like we need to cover them in more detail, right? So when we talk about the thousand faces of lupus, we're talking about its huge variety of symptoms. Someone with lupus might hear, "But you don't look sick to me." Well, they're actually experiencing debilitating fatigue or life-threatening organ damage. So let's break down some of the most common signs. First things first, we'll talk about the universal burdens. The single most common symptom is a pervasiveness, a debilitating fatigue affecting up to 90% of the patients. An unexplained persistent low-grade fever where you're constantly burning up, but not like to a high degree, but in low bursts. Next would be painful, swollen joints, often in the hands, wrists, and knees, which are typically worse in the morning. Not so much throughout the day. It does lighten up somewhat from what I've been told. I have a friend who has lupus, so in their situation, it would lighten up in the afternoons and then again pick up in the evenings, but it was mostly more unbearable in the mornings. Next would be visual signs, such as skin and hair. The most distinctive sign is the butterfly rash, or malar rash. I'm pretty sure it's pronounced malar, but I'm going to say malar because it looks about right to me. If I'm wrong, feel free to correct me in the comment section. But anyway, spreading across the cheeks and the nose in almost half the patients. You can tell from the way it's shaped what it is, because it'll kind of look like a butterfly. Next is photosensitivity, where exposure to UV light can not only just trigger a rash, but it can also trigger what's known as a full body flare. And in some people's case, which is unfortunate, hair loss and small painful sores inside the mouth or nose are also common. Some of these may not be immediately noticeable, but they do tend to flare up and become more obvious over time, so keep that in mind. If you know someone who may or may not have it, keep an eye on them. You want to be encouraging to these people. You don't want to bring them down. They're already going through the thick of it. They don't need anyone else's help, okay? Then there's the invisible dangers. Oh, the invisible dangers. This is the stuff that happens to internal organs. First off, kidney involvement, or lupus nephritis, as it's known. This is one of the most serious complications. The immune system attacks the kidneys, filtering units, which can lead to kidney failure, which is bad in most people's cases. Obviously, if you can't filter the poisons and stuff, toxins out of your body, that tends to back up in your system, and you can end up dying from poisoning that way. Next would be the brain and nervous system. You kind of have to include them both together as they're completely attached to each other, and if you separate them, you could almost paralyze someone, if not kill them. keep that in mind. This is not a guide on how to wipe someone out. I'm talking about how this disease slowly but surely wipes certain people off the map, or basically turns either some people into vegetables or kills them, which is unfortunate, but I mean, this is what happens, right? Anyway, this can when it attacks the brain and nervous system, this can cause everything from headaches to dizziness to memory problems and even a frustrative cognitive impairment known as brain fog, where everything's just blank for like a set period and you can't come up with nothing or say or do anything. It's not great, trust me. Next would be the heart and lungs. It can cause sharp chest pains from inflammation of the surrounding membranes, or it can also increase the long-term risk of cardiovascular disease, which is not great. There's also the issue of blood disorders. It can cause anemia, increase the risk of dangerous blood clots. So, before we go any further, just a little food for thought. You know, how is it that one disease can be so widespread and so devastating? Think about this for a minute. If it's not cancer, it's lupus. Cancer destroys the cells, right? And then spreads and spreads and spreads, and slowly but surely the cells are dying as they're being converted or infected with cancer, versus the other way around with lupus, where the system is literally attacking itself and making itself shut down because its inability to function as a result of all the damaged cells. While they both kind of play out almost exactly the same to a certain degree, one's more detrimental than the other. And while the death count on one is probably nowhere near the other, it's just something to consider, you know? All right, everybody. So let's go ahead and move on to the third part of this, right? So here's the next question. Who gets lupus? The stark disparities that exist within it, right? This isn't a disease that affects everyone equally, okay? And the data reveals some truly striking disparities. Like for one, gender, right? An estimated 9 out of 10 people diagnosed with lupus are women. Most often stricken during their childbearing years from the age of 15 to 44 is typically when they'll see it. Or how about the race and ethnicity data that we have? Lupus is 2 to 3 times more prevalent among women of color, including those of African American descent, Hispanic, Latinas, Asian Americans, and Native American descent than most white people, or white women, rather. Or how about the severity of it? Okay, let's look at that. Women from these minority groups tend to develop lupus at a younger age, experience more severe complications, and even have higher mortality rates. Because of this, lupus is one of the leading causes of death among young Black and Hispanic women, especially. If untreated, a lot of people don't even recognize it. They just kind of see it as like, oh, they're just sick, we need to take care of them, we need to do this, we need to do X, Y, and Z. But in reality, that's not really the case, you know? It's one of those things where it's just kind of like, how do I describe it? It's one of those things where you have to kind of be attentive, notice when something is out of turn, right? So, how do I put it? What causes it? Well, the honest answer is that nobody exactly knows the cause. As far as most of the data and the notes show from my research, it's still unknown. And I've looked through quite a few. There's a lot of theories out there, but there's no concrete answer. Researchers still believe it follows a perfect storm model, requiring a combination of set things, like genetic predisposition. It can run in the family. Or it could be hormones. The 9-to-1 female ratio strongly points to hormones, especially estrogen levels, that can trigger it. Or it could be environmental triggers, things like sunlight, viral infections, or even severe stress can be the final push that activates this disease, and it just runs rampant in your body. No one really knows. So Given all this complexity, how do you even diagnose a disease that looks like so many other things all at once, right? It's a process that more than likely requires a lot more detective work than a simple test. You know, it's easy to give someone different tests for different things, but those tests are going to show, if it's lupus, it's going to show for just about everything. Now, I know you guys, for some of y'all that are listening or watching, a lot of y'all have seen the show House. And in that show, a lot of the times when they're trying to diagnose what the issue is with a lot of the patients in this series, one of the first things they automatically go to is lupus. Because if it looks like it can be a multiple task of literally almost everything, more than likely it's going to be lupus versus cancer. Cancer is very specific with what it does and how it affects people. Versus lupus, which is the complete opposite. In this case, lupus looks like everything. Cancer is going to look like one thing. It's either going to be a lump, and it's either going to enforce something to shut down or not function properly. Versus this, where everything is not functioning properly all at once. You know? Like, how do I put it? Lupus symptoms overlap with many other conditions, which is why, on average, it usually takes nearly 6 years for a person to even get an accurate diagnosis for the first time. For the time they first notice any symptoms. There's no single test for lupus. A rheumatologist, that's the word I'm looking for, has to piece together clues from the patient's symptoms, a physical exam, if you will, and a series of lab tests. Then they have to perform something called the ANA test, or rather, the anti-nuclear antibodies exam. It's the primary method of screening used in blood to be able to figure out whether or not they have it. A negative test makes lupus highly unlikely, which is a good thing, but it's not 100%. If any of these tests were 100%, we'd be able to diagnose it off out the wazoo, and we'd know who has it, who doesn't, making it a little bit easier to, you know, to treat, but that's not the case. To standardize the diagnosis, doctors use a point-based checklist. If a patient's score for various symptoms and lab results reaches 10 or more, then they're more than likely classified to have, or possibly have, lupus in some strain or form or another. Which is, again, like I said, not a very good thing. It's unfortunate, if you will. All right. Let's get back to this. Let's talk about living with lupus. It's a continuous journey. Like I said, there's no cure for it whatsoever, which is kind of sad, right? But the goal of the treatment is to control the disease and improve the quality of life by preventing flares and reducing organ damage. That's the end goal here for a lot of people. It's unfortunate that this is what they have to go through, but I mean, what can you do? Within the medical toolkit, there are three things I want to point out, right? First is antimalarials, right? They're like, it's a cornerstone of treatment for almost every patient to reduce flares. It's like Plaquenil, if that makes perfect sense, for those who know what that is. The second one is steroids, right? It's it can be life-saving during serious flares, but they have significant long-term side effects, as you're aware, right? So it's one of those things you have to keep in mind. The last one in the medical toolkit that they have are immunosuppressants and biologics, or in other words, more advanced drugs used for severe cases to suppress or target specific parts of the immune system. When your immune system goes on an autoimmune rampage, the best thing that you can do is suppress their immune system long enough for the assault to stop. The downside to this is that it basically makes the person almost immunocompromised. In this state, that means even a common cold or a sneeze from a passing by person who just happened to walk into something that just triggered a sneeze could kill them. This is very, very, what's the word I'm looking for here? drastic. No, I guess the word I'm looking for here is it's important to note that a person with lupus is in a higher risk bracket of being killed by the simplest things as a result of it, or any of these treatments in any case, that their safety and their need to be comfortable takes a priority. It doesn't matter whether you feel some kind of way about it, whether you think that it's a lie, it doesn't matter. You don't know for a fact in your mind whether or not they're okay or not. You don't know if they're just sitting there suffering. And then more times than not, they are. They are sitting there suffering all by themselves, no one to help them, and no one to help them or make them feel better. And by confronting them about it every single day, you're not making the situation any better. So this is something just to keep in mind as far as this is concerned. The next thing I want to go ahead and point out is the lifestyle. Like I said, this can be a very detrimental time for anybody who has it, right? So if they were to go outside, sun protection is a must. Rigorous use of sunscreen and protective clothing is non-negotiable. They don't have a choice in this matter. Next would be their diet and exercise. An anti-inflammatory diet and gentle exercise can combat the fatigue, even just a little bit. Next would be stress management. Since stress is a known trigger, techniques like mindfulness are crucial. Things that, you know, you have to keep in mind. And then there's the last one, self-awareness. The key to living with lupus is recognizing or learning to recognize your personal warning signs of an impending flare-up, especially since you know that in the slight instance of a simple sneeze or a simple, what's the word I'm looking for here, miscalculation could be your last. And that's something that I want people to think about, you know? All right, so let's talk about that unseen battle. Okay, we've talked about the science, the symptoms, and the treatments. But to truly understand lupus, we need to talk about something that can't be measured in a blood test, the daily reality of living with a chronic or often invisible illness. This is where the real food for thought here comes in. For many people with lupus, one of the most frustrating battles is against perception. On a good day, they might look perfectly healthy on the outside. They're not in a wheelchair. They don't have a cast. But on the inside, they could be fighting debilitating fatigue, brain fog, intense pain. You know, like I said before, this disconnect is the core of what's known as invisible illness. To help people understand this, the chronic illness community developed a powerful metaphor that I want to share with you. It's called the spoon theory. Okay? Now, follow with me here, okay? In the spoon theory, right, imagine you wake up every day with a limited number of spoons. Let's say you get 12 spoons for the day, okay? Each spoon represents a finite unit of physical and mental energy. Every single action you take costs you spoons. Most games have this concept where you only have so many tasks that you can do with whatever you have. Example would be kindergarten. You have like 5 apples for each room or each section of the game, right? So if each action you take costs you spoons, then that means getting out of bed, that's one spoon. Taking a shower, there's another one. Making breakfast, oh, there's another one. How about getting dressed? There's a spoon. How about commuting to work? Well, that one might cost you 2 spoons because not only do you have to deal with driving and getting in your car, you got to deal with the people that's outside. Oh, there's a topic for later, talking about driving. My point of the matter here is that you haven't even started your workday. You're already down to 6 spoons. That's half of what you already got. A healthy person wakes up with what feels like an unlimited supply of spoons. They don't even have to think about it. But for a person with lupus, they don't have a choice. They have to meticulously budget their energy every single minute of every single day so that they know what they can and can't do. Do they have enough spoons to go to the grocery store after work? Maybe. But that might mean that they won't have enough spoons left over to cook dinner when they even get home. Do they want to go out with friends? No, that could probably cost them 3 or 4 spoons, right? Leaving them with energy debt rather than energy left for whatever they need. They'll have to pay back the extra fatigue for the next 2 days. That means they're stuck in bed for God knows however long. The spoon theory is a brilliant way to explain this concept of unlimited energy, and the difficult choices people with chronic fatigue have to make constantly. It's not about being lazy or unmotivated. It's about a real physical limit that these healthy people can't see. It's easy to say, well, you look perfectly fine. You should be able to do this. No, it doesn't work that way. They're no different than a handicapped person. Okay? Me personally, speaking from experience here, just because someone looks like they're fine doesn't mean they are. You know? And it's an unseen battle that extends to the mental health of the person, too. The connection between lupus and mental health conditions like depression and anxiety are not just psychological. Reaction to being sick, it's a direct biological one. The same inflammation that attacks the joints and skins can also cross the blood-brain barrier, you know, that thing we've been talking about over for the last couple of episodes here, and affect the brain itself, contributing to the brain fog or memory issues, or in worse people's cases, mood disorders, where their mood seems to swing left and right no matter what they do. Living with constant uncertainty of flares, the stress of managing medical appointments, and the frustration of physical limitation creates a perfect storm for mental health challenges. These are kinds of people that deal with mental disease or mental health issues on the daily. So how can we, as friends, family, and colleagues, be a better support system? How can we help? Right? First and most importantly, believe them. When someone with an invisible illness tells you that they're in pain or too fatigued to do something, your belief is the most powerful gift that you can give. Don't say, but you look so good, or you look healthy. Don't say that. Okay? That phrase, well-intentioned, can feel invalidated, deeply invalidating, and in some cases, suppressing of how they actually feel. Second, be flexible. Understand that plans may need to change at the last minute because of a flare-up. There is no isn't a rejection on you when they tell you, oh, I can't do that, or I'm sorry, I don't think I can help you with that today. It's an act of self-preservation. They're doing it for their own safety, their own needs, right? Third, offer specific help. Not health. If you could offer help, that would be great. Offer specific help, okay? Instead of saying, let me know if you need anything, which puts the burden on them to ask or try to say things like, I'm going to the store, try asking them, do you need me to go to the store for you? Or I can go to the store for you. Can I pick up your groceries for you? You know, anything of that nature. Or I have some free time on Tuesday. Can I help you with laundry or meal prep? Give back. Take the initiative. Try to be that person that they can come to for help. That way they don't have to burn out all of their spoons before they ever get the chance to complete whatever they need to do. And in this case, I guess you can kind of say this is like a forward way of saying kindness is the answer, but in all honesty, this is about being less selfish. These people don't have a choice. You do. And finally, educate yourself. By listening to podcasts like this one or reading articles from the Lupus Foundation, you're already taking a huge step. The more you understand, the more empathetic and effective your support will be. Understand that this unseen battle is crucial, because it's the understanding that we find the true path to hope and healing that we can help them with. Okay? Okay. All right, everybody. Let's go ahead and finish this off. I have one more thing I would like to break down. Okay? The differences between lupus and cancer. I know I keep bringing up the two, but let me actually go ahead and confront this head on and tell you what the difference is. The fundamental difference between attack versus growth, okay? On the most basic level, the difference is this. Lupus is an autoimmune disease, like we just discussed. All of that we just went over, right? This means the body's own immune system, which is supposed to be its defender, mistakenly attacks its own healthy tissues and organs. It's a disease of self-attack, right? Okay, well, what is the difference between that and cancer? Well, cancer is a disease of uncontrolled cell growth. This means the body's own cells mutate and begin to multiply without limit, forming tumors. It's not a, they don't form Yu-Gi-Oh cards, and they invade other tissues. It's a disease of malignant growth. Think of it this way, right? So in lupus, the body's army declares a civil war on itself. In cancer, a group of the body's own citizens become rebels and that build their own destructive empire to take down what's already there. Or if that's too simple, I feel like that is too simple. Let me give a more detailed look at how the two diseases compare across several key factors, okay? First things first, like I said, the core problem is that cancer is malignant, right? It's an uncontrolled growth of the body's own cells versus lupus, which is a hyperactive immune system attacking its own body tissues, right? So first off, their origins, right? Lupus, like I mentioned before, is a complex mix of genetic predisposition and environmental triggers that can cause immune systems in their body to malfunction. Cancer, on the other hand, starts with genetic mutations in specific cells or groups of cells. Then there's their behavior. Like I mentioned before, with lupus, the immune system causes widespread inflammation, leading to damage in joints, skin, kidneys, etc. It's characterized by flares or sickness and remission or wellness. Tumors, on the other hand, cells form tumors for cancer and can invade nearby tissues, metastasizing or spreading to distant part of the bodies utilizing the bloodstream. Okay, so what about the diagnosis of the two? First off, cancer is primarily diagnosed through CT scans, MRIs, and a biopsy where a sample of the suspicious tissue is removed and examined. Can't do that with lupus. Why? Because it's diagnosed through a combination of patient symptoms, physical exams, blood tests that look for specific antibodies, like that ANA test I mentioned earlier, and as a result of this, there's no single definitive test. Cancer is actually a lot easier to identify than lupus, but in a lot of cases, it's harder to find because of where it may or may not be. That being said, like I said, the next thing would be the treatment goals. Okay, well, what's the treatment goal differences between the two? As we mentioned earlier, for lupus, to manage symptoms and suppress the overactive immune system to prevent organ damage and aiming for long-term remission, not a cure. At some point, it'll eventually stop, hopefully. Again, this also puts the person in an immune deficient state, so they have to be very careful depending on what type of treatment they're receiving to suppress the overactive immune system. On the other hand, when it comes to cancer, to treat it, we go to destroy and remove all the cancer cells from the body. This is aiming for a cure, but it's also the same as lupus in this respect that they're aiming for long-term remission. They want the cure, but if they can't, they'll try to see if they can get it to the point where it's not a problem anymore. Can't do that with lupus. So, that being said, okay, well, cancer has primary treatments, right? You're probably asking. Why doesn't lupus? Well, it kind of does, but they're not great, okay? For cancer, surgery, chemotherapy, radiation, immunotherapy helps the immune system fight the cancer. That's what immunotherapy is for. These are ways you can fight cancer, and they're known to work to a certain degree. I'm not a fan of radiation because it can cause other issues like hair loss and such, but the same can be said about lupus. Immunosuppressants, corticosteroids to reduce inflammation, antimalarials, like I mentioned before, you're just hopped up on a bunch of medicine, hoping that some of these will eventually cause your immune system to stop attacking itself and attacking the rest of your body. But there's one main difference between these two. Despite everything that I just read and everything that I just told you from the research that I've gathered, there's only one question here that's left to answer. Is it curable? Cancer? Yeah. Many cancers can be cured, especially if detected early. Others can be managed as chronic diseases until the point where, you know, either they can't afford to take care of themselves anymore, or they either grow out of it or they die. It's unfortunate, but this is the circumstance. But for the most part, cancer can be cured. Lupus cannot. It's a chronic lifelong condition. There's no known cure, and treatment mainly focuses on the disease. So, that's something to keep in mind, a little bit of food for thought. I have one more question, though, and this is something I had to look a little bit deeper for. I don't think any of y'all have ever wanted to ask this question, but I'll ask it for you. Maybe you've considered it but didn't want to say it. That's fine. I'll cover it for you, especially. That way you can save face, right? Can one cause the other? While there are different diseases, there can be a complex relationship between these two, right? Lupus and cancer risk. Well, let's see. People with lupus, particularly systematic lupus, erythematosus, or SLE, has a slightly increased risk of developing certain types of cancers, most notably lymphomas, which is an attack on the lymph system in your body. This is believed to be due to chronic inflammation and long-term use of immunosuppressant drugs, which are required to manage this disease, as I mentioned before. So that is a possible risk. However, cancer treatment in lupus, in that order, it's very rare, actually, believe it or not. Certain cancer treatments, particularly newer immunotherapies designed to unleash the immune system to fight cancer, can trigger autoimmune responses that mimic lupus, but it's not quite the same thing. Because in this case, the immune system is actually being sent out to fight, and there's actually a target for it to hit that's not the actual normal body's physical cells. So then, with this whole thought in mind, what's the takeaway here? Though both can be present with similar systematic symptoms like fatigue, pain, fever, lupus and cancer are not the same thing. They have completely different biological origins and require vastly different diagnostic and treatment approaches. Understanding that lupus is a disease of a confused immune system, and cancer is just a disease of rogue cell growth, is the key to grasping the fundamental difference between these two challenging conditions. All right, everybody. With that being said, let's go ahead and wind out now, right? While the challenges of lupus are formidable, the narrative is increasingly one of resilience and hope. For over 50 years, treatment options barely changed, but the 21st century has been a turning point, and with new targeted therapies offering better outcomes, the final thought is this, okay? Lupus is a chronic and challenging journey, but the combination of more effective treatments, proactive self-care, and a global support community has transformed it and what it means to live with the disease. Millions of people are successfully managing their conditions. They're refusing to be defined by it, which is great, and living full, productive, and meaningful lives. I want you to take that to heart and give it some thought. This is the reality of what is. This is what these people deal with on the daily. Well, that's all I have for you guys today. Thanks for tuning in for Food for Thought, Thoughts If It Were You. I'm your host, Neo Gentrix. This is Season 3. I look forward to the next time, guys, where we'll be talking about some interesting topics, kicking back into the whole essential skills bracket. And I hope you'll have a great rest of your day. If you have a comment that you want to leave on what I've discussed, you see I missed some information, or you think it's wrong, or you have a suggestion for another episode or topic idea, feel free to leave a comment down below if you're watching this on YouTube or on Spotify or Apple Podcasts, or check us out on some of our other platforms if you're on the go more and you want to listen to future episodes, or go back and listen to some old ones. And I hope you all have a great rest of your day.